Now, last week, RTE Investigates produced an excellent programme on the third wave of COVID in our hospitals. It was a hard watch. It featured the staff and patients at Talla University Hospital. And one of the staff that stood out when we were watching it was Father John Kelly. And Father John is the Director of Pastoral Care out in Talla. And he's on the line now. How are you doing, John?
Good, Ray. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking our call today. I suppose we only had to watch it for an hour and a quarter. You have to live it. But of course, that was at the height of the surge and all of that. And it seems like we're the other side now. Is there a sense of that out in Talla?
There is, Ray. Thankfully, we sort of have come a little out of the surge. We're still quite busy. As you know, the intensive care units around the country are still at capacity, and that will be the same here. But thankfully, you know, we are beginning to come out of it. Doesn't mean we don't have sick patients. We have lots of sick patients, yeah.
Yeah, and people are still dying, unfortunately. But for the staff and yourself, people who've lived through this since March of last year, there must be a little sense of, you know, getting through it and coming out the other end.
Well, there is a sense that we are beginning to move out of it. Yeah. However, you know, there's an uncertain future still. You know, who did we know in December that we would face January as we did with such a, you know, huge number?
Well, you could argue we did.
Well, you could.
You could.
But the good thing is, as you rightly say, is that we are seeing less people present themselves with COVID-19.
Yeah.
However, the beds are full with other patients who have other illnesses.
Oh, yes, of course. It's a hospital after all.
Yeah, so you're right. There are signs of hope. Of course, the vaccine is a great sign of hope. But there's also signs, too, that the numbers are decreasing, which is great news for staff who've been dealing with this since this time last year.
Yeah.
You know, we were in preparation at this time last year for what was expected.
Mm. Isn't hope very important, John?
Well, it's the last thing to die. I mean, if you lose hope, where are you?
Yeah.
Where are any of us?
Yeah.
Because hope is what that's what keeping us going. I mean, you know, the hope that spring has come, and it has come, and there's lots of bright days, and you know, there's brightness on the horizon. And the vaccine is a great sign of hope.
It is, and you've seen it firsthand out there. Have you been vaccinated yourself? Because you're
I think at this stage, all the hospital staff here in Talla University Hospital have been vaccinated, or at least have received one vaccine.
How was that for you getting it? How did you know?
I suppose like everybody else, I was looking forward to it because it brings some protection.
Yeah.
It certainly protects you working in this environment. I think Professor Brendan Kelly describes right, the secret ingredient in the vaccine is hope, you know.
Yes, there you go, we're back to that word again.
It's a great ingredient, really, hope. it certainly brought, it doesn't take away the reality of working in COVID-like situations where we have to take the PPE precautions still and where we need to protect our patients and we need to protect each other.
Yeah.
So what we have been doing remains the same. But however, you do feel that you have more protection as a person, which is very hard.
And I know that as you know, Director of Pastoral Care, that it's not just the patients that you have a responsibility for, it's also the staff.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, Talla University Hospital is like a little village. There's 3,000 plus staff here, so it's a big complex.
Yeah, that's a
big number.
That's a big village.
It's a big village. Yeah. And the staff are, you know, it's the staff's great strength and great determination that have kept this whole machine going, you know, kept the whole hospital moving. It's their teamwork, it's their professionalism, but also their great care, and they're looking out for each other and they're minding each other in the midst of these difficult days. So my responsibilities include the staff, as does the other members of the pastoral care team. We're here for the staff as well as the patients. And
so was there an increase in people coming knocking on your door staff wise
Well, I wouldn't say it's quite knocking on the door because we're
around
the building.
Yes,
yes, people are turning to you because they're exhausted, they're tired, they have the same fears and anxieties that the rest of the population has, and they're trying to homeschool, they're trying to keep the fridge full, they're trying to come into work and work in these extremely difficult situations.
And have you lost members of staff to COVID out there?
Well, thankfully, we haven't.
Right.
However, we have a number of staff who have been seriously affected by it.
Yes. Right. Okay. Yes. Yes. Tell me a bit about yourself. You came to the priesthood late in life. What age were you?
I suppose I entered the seminary about when I was 23. I'd worked in retail management for a number of years in menswear.
Right.
And yeah, sort of came in at 23 and then ordained 91 and went to Dunnecarney Parish. And I also worked in Ord School Reach as a school chaplain for 8 years. And then I came to Tally University Hospital back in 1999, would you believe, a few months after the hospital opened.
Right, so you're 22 years this year.
Or thereabouts. I don't normally mention numbers, but that's it. I'm here since just after the hospital opened.
Yeah. Yeah. Pastoral care, whenever I talk to people like Sister Stan and, you know, Peter McFerry and all that, they got into, you know, the priesthood or the nunhood because they were attracted to pastoral care. And they had a relationship with God, obviously, but the pastoral care was the big thing. And they continue to do that now. It's obviously a huge part of your vocation, the pastoral care.
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Stan and Peter McFerry. They work with the homeless, you know, those on the margins of our society. And I suppose for me, caring for the sick is about who I am. You might say it's my vocation.
Yeah.
I was involved in the sick long while I was at school, actually. I used to go to Lourdes. The guy beside me, his family went to Lourdes as helper. So I started to go with him at a young age to Lourdes to volunteer as a helper. So in many ways, caring for the sick has been part of my journey, and that's my pastoral care. And I suppose I've been privileged to work here over the last number of years, providing that care because, you know, yes, there's a faith dimension, but it's a human dimension. It's caring for people in their sickness, in their anxiety. And a large part of my work here, along with caring for staff, is being with people in their grief. Reality of hospital life is that people die. So I journey with people towards end of life, in end of life care, caring for the patient and the family. And then, of course, there are tragic deaths where I'd be with people in the emergency department providing good pastoral care, holistic care.
So you, in your job, are with people when they're most vulnerable?
Yes.
And what do you learn? What have you learned about the human condition from that?
Well, I'm always inspired by, it's very humbling to be with people towards the end of life, just to listen to their story as they try to make sense, as they try to leave behind a legacy, leave behind something for the family to hold on to. Just inspired by their sharing, their honesty. I'm inspired by the strength and the dignity they show towards end of life. Yeah, it's quite extraordinary, very humbling.
And we've spoken to people, you know, we spoke to Catherine Mannix, and she's written a book, With the End in Mind, I think is the name of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And she has been present, you know, when thousands of people have died. But because you're a priest, I suppose there's an added dimension, isn't there, in that people feel they can look for forgiveness in some sort. They can tell you their sins, things that they might have kept secret for their whole life.
Yeah, well, for us, the patient sets the agenda. So in some cases, people will look for some reconciliation. They might be looking for some forgiveness in their life.
Mm.
So, and then there's some people who just might like some reconciliation among their family. So you might be a broker between the family, and
right.
You might be just somebody there to journey with them and maybe make connections with the family, because central to pastoral care is connecting people. So there's times when I'm introducing family members to a patient, maybe because they've asked me to contact them, they haven't seen them for years.
Right.
Recently I introduced patients who his brothers and sisters haven't seen him for years, 20 years he told me. He asked me to make contact with him because he wanted to make peace with himself, he wanted to make peace with his family, and he wanted to make peace with his God, yeah. So it's the patient that brings up their requirements. We accompany them. And I suppose as a priest, I can bring the sacraments of the church. I can bring reconciliation and the sacrament of the sick. But most of the healthcare chaplains here would be non-ordained. And they likewise would bring care and compassion. They'd bring holistic care to the bedside, yeah.
Yeah. And you need a sort of a knowledge of medicine in a way, because I remember having to deal with a pastor in another hospital, and they had to know that there was going to be an autopsy, and they had to know, you know, what was going to happen, so we could be, me and another person could be talked through it, so we understood what was going to happen.
Yes. Well, we don't work on our own. We work as a member of a multidisciplinary team. So if I'm part of the hematology multidisciplinary team or oncology, I certainly will, you know, have information about patient care. But, you know, there's a great education department here in the hospital, so we attend ongoing professional development. We go to Grand Rounds, which is doctor and other healthcare professionals hearing from other professionals about health and well-being and disease of one kind or another.
Yeah, and speaking of diseases, you know, COVID, like nothing else you've witnessed in your career out in Talla, and an awful lot of fear around it.
Yeah.
Right from the get-go, I would imagine, once people come into hospital with it, they know that, you know, this could possibly end up in death.
You're right, Ray. COVID-19 confronts us with pain and suffering.
Mm.
I mean, every day for the past year, death has been part of our news. Death has loomed near people for the past year. That's extraordinary in ways. And the questions people have, the big questions like, will I get infected? Will I die? People are searching for hope and meaning in the midst of this pandemic.
How do you answer those questions?
Often I don't have all the answers. In fact, very few answers. Most of the time I just sit and listen, just accompany the patients. It's often no words. And then there's times when I'm looking for the right words to comfort them or to assure them that they won't be alone, that they won't suffer pain, because what the coronavirus does is bring mental turmoil and emotional turmoil and some spiritual turmoil for people. So it can be very frightening.
Mm. And one of the things that I read, or maybe you said, is that there was a bit of a myth that people were dying alone in hospital.
Yes, yeah, I fully agree with you there, Ray. Nobody died alone. There was always a staff member with them, and in most cases, family members. So, nobody did die alone. However, they didn't have the people they might have liked to have with them, like their own family members. And in many cases in this last past month, family members have been too sick at home to come in.
Yeah.
And making that call to a family and asking them to come in has been difficult to hear them say, you know, I'm too sick. I can't get out of bed to go in. So it's very difficult to hear that. But you're right, nobody died alone in a sense. But of course, everybody would like to have their own.
Yes. And what about you, John? Because, you know, this has been an horrific 11, nearly 12 months now. And there was a big draw on you emotionally. And how do you take care of yourself?
Well, self-care for all healthcare professionals is so important because we never know what we might experience here. I suppose in Talla University Hospital, we work very much as a team. So I see myself as a member of team throughout the hospital. And our own pastoral care team and our own students here who are training in healthcare chaplaincy, we work very much as a team and we support each other. Handover in the morning is so important. And in a sense, we almost debrief ourselves going home from night duty or coming on duty just to help each other. And then, of course, there's professional supports like supervision. And we know that we are very much valued by the organization here. We come under the director of nursing. So our director of nursing here, Anya Lynch, would be a very supportive presence to us, as all the other staff in the hospital would be. So, you're right.
How many people are on your team?
We have a team of 8 chaplains, yeah.
Right, and you're the only ordained?
No, we have another guy. Manus is here with us part-time, yes. Yeah. So I'm not the only ordained.
So but there are fewer and fewer chaplains ordained, I would imagine. That's the way things
there's
are.
Less so. It's more and more people who are not ordained, you know, and we have some great young professional chaplains here. I think of Maria. She just joined the team back in December, and she came straight from college, having completed her degree in theology, a master's in scripture, and a higher diploma in healthcare chaplaincy. So, I mean, they're all young, qualified people. Most of the chaplains here would be in their 20s, 30s, and 50s, would you believe? Yeah.
And we hear an awful lot about people turning to God on their deathbed. Is that something you've experienced?
I can't say they turn to God in their deathbed, but they look for meaning, and they look for purpose, and they look for some sense of the other.
Right.
You know, I can't say there's those exceptional moments where people turn to God. I think if some person has God in their lives, they certainly would want this.
Yes, no, I mean the people who maybe have drifted away from God and then they return on their deathbed. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes, yeah, well, I can't say they return, but there's a searching and there's a longing and there's looking for answers.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, you do meet people who are trying to bring together their life and ask those big questions about where is God in all of this, and you know, is there a God, you know?
Yeah. How do you answer that?
Again, it's about listening, it's about being with them, it's about assuring them that they're loved by their family, that they're not alone, that, you know, there is, you know, if they have belief in God, we assure them that God that created them is there with them in their sickness and in their suffering. But really, it's where the person is at. We're not going to go bringing God into somebody's life if it's not part of their journey.
Okay.
However, it's very seldom you meet people who are not searching and looking for some sort of peace or reconciliation or answers to that big question.
Yeah. He was a great addition to the Donnycarney Parish and a good friend of Craigh Kieran GA Club. A great human being doing an incredibly difficult job. Good luck to him, says Francis Bourne Donnycarney. And the staff are amazing in Talla Hospital, Dublin, and so is Father John Kelly. They work so hard. Fair play to them, Deirdre Butler, Kells County Meath. And John Kelly, simply the best. There you go. I couldn't sing it for you, John, but there you go. An ex-Talla member, that's Cathy Phillips. And please ask John, what is the patient's most common reaction to dying? That's because that's you've been there. What is the most common reaction?
Well, I'm absolutely amazed at how they accept what's happening. You know, I've sat with people who've just been told that the virus has taken over their lives. It's more they're thinking of their family. They're not thinking of themselves, which is extraordinary.
Isn't that extraordinary? Isn't it?
I've met nobody who's angry or annoyed that the virus has caused them. They immediately think of the people they're leaving behind.
Yeah.
It's an extraordinary...
You see, that's I know it's a horrible thing to lose a loved one, but isn't that reassuring? You know, that because basically we're all good. We're all good people.
And love. The love they have for their family is what triumphs. It's stronger than death in a sense, you know. Yeah.
John, I'll let you back to your work there because I know you're in your office. And thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today.
I'm right. Thank you and good to talk to you.
Yeah. And listen, you know, it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. Thanks to everybody out there. 3,000 staff in Talla University Hospital.
A big team.
Yeah. And just from watching that, I know that it's been hell for them. But, you know, there is the other H word. There is hope.
There is that. We keep that going. We keep that alive.
Okay. Thanks, John. Mind
Take
yourself.
Care. Have a good evening. Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.